The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
Nirvana 11 after the hour. George Brockler with you back on the, I don't know what that eponymous, is that it? George Brockler show on 710 KNUS. Listen, if you have done anything with your Alexa to check out the weather, you know today kind of blows. It's supposed to be light rain and snow. When you get up and there's already clouds hanging low, you know it's going to be a little chilly, high of 45. Thanksgiving Day 53, that is warm enough to go out with your kids and throw the ball around in between football games. I plan on doing exactly that. And then Friday, man, we spike to 65, and then we kind of hover around there. Not enough for good outdoor snow, anything. So hopefully we'll get some snow in here very soon. I want to shift gears. It's just a bit, by the way, because, you know, we did start talking with Pete about the bond and the bail and the crime and all that other stuff, and it led to this really a much more fascinating discussion about the approach towards perfecting man and whether you can do that. But this is a little bit of a turn from that. About a year ago, I was fortunate on the Saturday version of the George Show to have on the assistant special agent in charge. Really, if anyone knows anything about the feds, just the funniest names they give each other, ASAC, which is just, who wants to be a SAC? I don't know, but it's apparently a pretty good gig. He has now graduated to acting special agent in charge, which is ASAC. But nonetheless, super guy, going to tell us about some stuff you got to know about. And if you're looking for things to be thankful for, be thankful that you're not part of this group that we're going to talk about here in some stuff that's ravaging the state of Colorado and beyond. Acting special agent in charge, ASAC, Dave Oleski from the DEA. Sir, thanks for joining us this morning.
No, good morning, George. Thank you for having me on this morning.
Have you ever thought about going up the chain and saying, can we get rid of the SAC thing and call me something else like Commodore or El Jefe or something? Because SAC is just tough.
I
mean, you know, because when you're a kid, when you're a boy, at 12 years old, SAC just makes you giggle, like, you know.
I like going just with a special agent. That's good enough, You know, good enough to start with me.
We had you on a year ago, and you told us some pretty sobering, forgive the pun, numbers regarding fentanyl activity, overdose deaths, all that other stuff. It would be good to start there. Tell us what we have seen from last year to this year, better, worse, the same.
Yeah, so when I came on just about a year, I think I came on last December, the CDC had issued a public health alert letting everyone know about the record number of overdose deaths across our country. And so they just did that again just a couple of weeks ago. And I think all of us can get numb to the numbers. So last year, the numbers were 78,000 Americans had died as a result of a drug-related overdose. Well, when they came out with the numbers just a few weeks ago, and this covers the time period from May 2020 to April 2021. So if you think going back, that was right about at the start of like peak lockdown when COVID had just taken hold of our country. And so those numbers, when they came out, unfortunately were, like you said, sobering that we crossed the 100,000 mark. And when you look at those numbers, like I said, people can become numb to statistics. But if you picture, let's say, Rockies Stadium, Coors Field holds about 50,000 folks, that's two times the amount of people that can fit, you know, in the stadium. And specifically,
hold on. What were those numbers? What did you just say?
So we had crossed the 100,000 mark in terms of drug-related overdoses for the 12-month period ending April of this year.
Do we know how many of those are related to fentanyl or opioids? Is that just straight opioids, or is that any and all drugs?
Yep. So now we know those numbers, and so they came out and they said 78,000 individuals were specific to right around 70,000 specific to opioid related deaths. So, and I said, trying to just get a mental picture, you know, the capacity of the Bronco Stadium is right around 76,000, and we surpassed that just specific to opioid deaths.
That is ridiculous. Why would that be taking place at a higher level during a period that, and maybe this is intuitive and I'm not picking up on it, why would that be happening at a higher rate when we were in this economic slowdown, this government shutdown, and then we start to come out of it? What do you think is causing this?
I think it's a number of factors when you start talking about, you know, COVID, and there might be folks who had turned to, you know, to this counterfeit pills, you know, dealing with depression and isolation has definitely been talked about over the last couple of years. But then it also goes and kind of marries up with the trends that we're seeing in terms of just drug trafficking in general and the Mexican drug trafficking organizations capitalizing on kind of the opioid and prescription pill addiction problems that we've had over the last decade. And so these pills that are now flooding our market are more readily available than they've ever been. And even I would say I got here right around that time we were talking about in April of 2020. And here just in the, you know, in the Denver area, few and far between were we seeing these pill seizures. And now just over like the last 6 months, seeing, you know, seizures anywhere from, you know, 50,000 up to 100,000 pills at a time is very common. And so there's a readily available supply coming out of Mexico. And then just in terms of the death, we're seeing a higher potency pill. And so it's, you know, much easier to access for those folks. So even in isolation, one of the things I've been talking about, especially to our younger folks and parents, is the readily and easily accessible way of accessing these via social media applications, TikTok, Snapchat, some of the other Facebook marketplace websites where, you know, I kind of say, I've been asked before, like, you know, at what age should we start talking to our youth, about drugs? And I say as soon as they're accessing and going on to some of these forums unsupervised, that's when you should start talking to them. Because like you said, as people were in isolation and not, you know, so much out and about, you don't have to go to the, you know, the dark street corner like you did years ago or a dangerous part of town. These online forums are kind of the drug marketplace of today. And, you know, us in law enforcement and society at large just needs to be aware of it and need to adapt to the changing way which these pills are trafficked.
When you talk about these Mexican DTOs, these drug trafficking organizations, and you talk about the proliferation of the availability of these pills, I mean, tell us how many of these pills and the fentanyl product itself, these products, are produced right here in good old USA versus south of the border?
What I would say is in the last year, we've seized just in our Denver division office, so the greater Denver area, we've seized almost five times the pills we did the year before.
Oh my goodness.
Close to a million pills. And I can't name you one investigation where they were manufactured, here in the United States. These are drug trafficking organizations based in Mexico getting their precursor chemicals to manufacture it out of China. They manufacture it and then, shipped from Mexico up here to the U.S. And these pills are, you know, whether it's these fentanyl-laced counterfeit pills, or even we're seeing the rise of methamphetamine, these are one of the commonalities is synthetic drugs. And, you know, it's not like when you're talking, let's say, cocaine or heroin shipped out of South America, where you need go fast boats and you're crossing, you know, six, seven countries to get the drugs from, far down south up to the United States. These are all based, manufactured pills right there in Mexico.
Now, Dave, we're talking with Special Agent in Charge, Acting Special Agent in Charge, Dave Oleski from the DEA. I just want to remind people as they listen to this, some of the stuff that you were talking about to get us to this next section. The fentanyl stuff seems to be produced in China, makes its way to Mexico, and then right over our porous border. And I'm going to ask you to comment as best you can about whether or not there seems to be anything that we have done thus far that has slowed the flow of these lethal pills over our southern border. But then the second thing is, and this is a quick diversion into meth, you talked about synthetic drugs. Methamphetamine, of course, is made from a whole bunch of other things, but mostly cold medications, as best I can tell. But I remember a time, I want to say mid to late 90s, maybe early 2000s, when a lot of meth was being produced here in America. Like, there would be these mobile labs and guys could make it in their kit. Has that all died off? Are we now just seeing meth imported straight up from Mexico?
Yeah, I'll start with your second question first. No, we're seeing that very rarely do you see a methamphetamine being made in some clandestine...
Like Breaking Bad.
You know, yeah, that's not happening anymore. And I think the reason why is, yes, we cracked down on that and the precursor chemicals here in the U.S. But then, two, it's just the Mexican DTOs, you know, producing these in super labs in Mexico. It's just become so cost-effective for, you know, them to do so. Again, large quantities of precursor chemicals out of China go into Mexico. They have these super labs, you know, generating thousands of ton quantities of meth, you know, coming north. So it's for somebody, one, to manufacture it here in the U.S., they're not going to beat the, you know, it's still a business, right? They're not going to beat the price that the cartels are putting forth.
So it's so easy to get it across the border and up into this market that it is cheaper to buy it when it's produced externally versus just make it here in the U.S.?
Yeah, I would say, yeah, yes. I don't know if it's so much, you know, I think the cartels, you know, based in Mexico are going to take care of, when you're talking about the border, they're going to take care of the vulnerability that we might have. And so say every layer that of security, whatever barriers we can put between the consumer on this end and where it's manufactured, you know, that's what we try to do, whether it's us or partners with, you know, other federal agencies, our local counterparts, our, you know, our Customs and Border Patrol. You know, we got to try and put up those barriers between them because they're right there, based south of our border. And I think part of the message and why coming on today is just that we can't arrest our way out of this problem. And so to be able to communicate to everyone listening just of the dangers of this drugs and what we're seeing, you know, the window that I get to see, George, you know, across here, the Denver area, the four states we supervise or nationally, is just trying to get this message out of the dangers of these counterfeit pills.
Is the risk, then, it sounds like what you're saying is people are out there buying these relatively cheap. And what do they go for, by the way, a knockoff opioid pill? What does it go
for? I think that's part of it when it comes to availability and supply is, backtrack a little bit, 1 kilo of fentanyl down in Mexico can range for about $30,000. So I like to say, picture your high school, you know, high school textbook or your law book, George, you know, and that can generate about 500,000 pills from that one kilogram. And so, yeah, so 500,000 pills. And I think when we spoke last year, if I'm not mistaken, when I was talking about what I'll call the wholesale amount, they might have been going for $8 to $10 each. Well, that price, again, wholesale has dropped down, if you're buying 100 pill quantities, has dropped to as low as $3 or $4.
Oh,
and they're selling, if they're selling to the individual, well, it's whether it's on TikTok or, you know, in individual pill quantities, they can go for upwards of $20, $30. Up in Montana, they can go for anywhere for $70 to $80 a pill.
Oh, my God.
So whether or not you're talking about the availability or the ease across in the border, the risk, you know, or the reward outweighs the risk from both, you know, losing a load of drugs, or even getting, you know, the consequences of the justice system.
Does every one of these pills contain some amount of fentanyl? And it's just a question of whether you're getting, in essence, like a hot shot versus something else. I mean, do they all contain?
Think of it this way. Also, these aren't pills that are made, you know, in a
FDA approved lab.
Yeah, right. They're not. They're getting made in a garage in a warehouse down in Mexico, and so in our DEA labs, studies of all the seizures that we made last year, 2 out of 5 pills contains a potential lethal dose of fentanyl. And so
that's 40% for a kid who went to public school for meth.
It doesn't mean that the person is at, you know, going to die, but it has a potential lethal dose. You know, everyone has different weight sizes, you know, and but those numbers are staggering. And this past October, we launched a DEA campaign named One Pill Can Kill. And so we've gone out and kind of messaged that across the board to communities across our country. And even in October, I had gone out to a number of schools, and I had gone to one grammar school in the area. And what I found interesting is at first we had, I would say it was maybe first, second graders all the way up to eighth graders just talking about living a healthy life and saying no to drugs. And at one point, one of the teachers said, you know, Dave, can you stay a little bit longer and speak to some of our fifth to eighth graders? Again, you know, give them a little bit more deeper message. And I hadn't initially planned on doing so. So I said, okay, what am I going to start talking to these kids about? And so I just threw out there to start. I said, how many of you have heard of fentanyl? And I'm thinking, I'm talking to 9 to 12, 12-year-olds, 13-year-olds. And I was shocked that almost two-thirds of the kids raised their hand.
Ooh,
and maybe
smokes.
They wouldn't get into in-depth conversation like we are, but they've at least heard of that. And so I kind of just took that as that's a game changer, that as far as society, community, you know, and our youth are hearing this and knowing about it. So, and I think that's why, you know, at first I said, you know, one pill can kill. Is this a message that, you know, should be, you know, directed at kids so young?
But yes.
As I've looked at, and as I've looked over the last year and seen photos and heard the stories of, you know, those 100,000 folks who passed away, it's not unique to any race, you know, socioeconomic class. You know, I've seen photos, you know, of high school kids, you know, all the way up to the elderly who've turned to these drugs and, you know, think they're getting some prescription pill, you know, maybe diverted from a pharmacy, and they're not.
Forgive me, Dave, in the couple minutes we had left, and I wanted to get to this, but you've got so much good information all the time. I could do this all day. You were going to talk about, I think to some extent, something that we started off with Pete and I before the top of the hour, and that is this idea of the violence that grows out of this and the bail and the bond portion.
So, yeah, so we focus, you know, here our priority is the overdose deaths and then violent crime. And, you know, as we see here in the greater Denver areas, we focus on that. You know, we had a recent seizure. We did a search warrant in a house in the last few months. We seized well over a couple pounds of meth, heroin, some stolen firearms, and I believe it was around 1,500 fentanyl pills. And within a couple of hours of that person getting charged, they were they were released on a PR unsecured bond for $1,000.
Oh, of course.
And back on the street.
Of course.
You know, then we had to go out in the following weeks to go apprehend them again. And so I think one of the stories when it comes to fentanyl, and as maybe society's become a little bit more accepting of the illegal drug, sad to say, and, you know, the consequences of this is, you know, this individual gets released.
And Dave, forgive me. Can I do this? Can we tell this story? Can you hang on through the bottom of this? I just don't want to lose the story. And actually, we're almost out of time, like 20 seconds. Can you hang on, or do you have to go?
Sure, let's do it.
Let's hang on. Okay, listen. When we come back, we'll get Dave Oleski talking to us more about some of the violence and stuff that has grown out of this, so that you can be aware, be smarter, and save some lives. Until that time, you're listening to George Brockler on the George Brockler Show at 710 KNUS. George Brockler back with you here on the George Brockler Show, 710 KNUS. Going right back to our VIP line with Acting Special Agent in Charge from the Drug Enforcement Agency, Dave Oleski. Dave, I cut you off because the clock made me do it. You were in the process of telling us a compelling story about what you're seeing out there that sort of ties in a lot of the stuff we've been talking about.
Sure. So if I can pick up with, you know, as I was saying, the illegal drugs, you know, society seems to have become maybe a little bit more accepting of it over the course of time. And I think when you look at the impacts that it has on society at large, there's different buckets. And so one bucket, as we talked about earlier, was, you know, the end user overdoses, the fentanyl crisis. There's the bucket with homelessness and how, you know, drug use is associated with that in some instances. But then there's this other bucket, and there's many probably, but of violent crime and, you know, criminal activity. And so I was just starting to tell the story about just, it was about a month ago, maybe 2 months ago, where we had our guys had done a search warrant on a residence. They ended up seizing multiple firearms stolen. They ended up seizing at least a pound of meth, heroin, and then close to 2,000 of these counterfeit fentanyl-laced pills. And within, I think it was 2 to 3 hours of the individual's arrest, he was released on an unsecured PR bond for $1,000. And that story made its way back to me. And, you know, our guys were talking about our investigation, the fact we have to.
Is that demoralizing, Dave? Like when your guys put all that time and effort and try to get this guy off the street who's clearly peddling these lethal pills and all this stuff to have him just turned right back around and put back into the malls with our families. Does that demoralize your folks or how do they approach that?
Yeah, I think I'd be lying if I said it doesn't, because I think there's a role to play. I said earlier, we know we're not going to arrest our way out of this overall as a society, but these individuals are putting this poison, you know, on our streets here, and people are dying from it. And so what I was just about to say before the break is, you know, what should this expectation be for all of us as society when an individual like this, and there are many out, it's not like I can tell the story and the person's going to know who they are because there's so many of these stories, is that, you know, this person gets re-released on the street, and they're going to be back at it. We talked earlier about how profitable these pills are to sell and the amount of money involved, and then what is the consequences by the, you know, the legal system or the justice system that he's released so quickly. So if the following weekend he's back out on the street and he has the equivalent of 1,000 pills where 2 out of 5 pills has a lethal dose, is that accepting to society that he is – potentially going to go right back out? And while it might not be the firearm that he's pulling the trigger on for the ultimate, you know, end user of the pills, he's still putting this poison back out on the street that's, you know, a risk to everyone. And so it's a demoralizing, and I think part of, again, you know, community engagement, getting the story out of what we're seeing, both with the pills and the violence. And I think the nexus between violent crime and illegal drug trafficking, you know, it goes hand in hand. And just this past summer, while it might be a few months ago, we had done a 2-week surge partnering with Aurora Police Department, the Marshals. We have what's called the Colorado Violent Offenders Task Force. And we had prioritized for the 2 weeks going after the worst of the worst. And so I'd like to think it was a very successful operation and that we arrested about 117 violent individuals. And statistically, when we had looked at those folks arrested, more than 51% of those apprehended had in their criminal history some type of a drug charge. So it had ranged from manufacturing, distribution, and then, yes, you know, some of it might have been simple possession, but I still think that goes hand in hand of, you know, the nexus with violence and violent crime and, you know, what's going to continue to be a focus for us, you know, on my end.
Talk about that violent crime stuff a little bit more in terms of is it the drugs itself, like the effect that the drugs have on people that make them more inclined to engage in violence? Is it the addiction piece? Is it the money piece? Is it the I don't want to get arrested piece? I mean, and if you know, I mean, maybe it's a combination of all those things, but what's the biggest thing?
You know, I'm not a doctor. I'm not
I'm not either.
Someone in the medical field, right, to go into that. I just would have to say is that it's way too common to see in these individuals' histories that reference to or that nexus to the drug side of things. Again, so whether it's on the individuals using, whether or not it's, you know, we end up seeing there's so many stories in the past year, in the past few months, of whether you want to call it gang on gang or, you know, drug trafficker on drug trafficker, you know, trying to rob, you know, someone else in the community where they know drugs are being stashed. You know, I'll say when you said earlier about, you know, is it demoralizing when someone's released on the streets? I think certainly there's the investigative piece where people put in, and our agents put in so much time into these investigations. You want to see that person stay behind bars. But the second part of it is not only are these people who get put back on the street a risk to the community, they're a risk to our agents, you know, our officers who have to then go out at some point in the future and apprehend them. And I was just looking earlier today because we partner a lot with our local agencies, and I look at, you know, an operational plan for our guys to go out, And it is such a lengthy history that these individuals have: weapons possession, aggravated robbery, you know, firearms charges. It's, you know, 2 pages long that my folks have to go out on the street now and apprehend someone. And right in the middle is multiple, you know, dangerous drug charges also. And so I think that nexus with violent crime is, you know, is there, and it's part of the story to tell. And, you know, I'm just trying to share that message with you.
That case that you described, what jurisdiction was that in?
The one where he was released? I know it was just here in the Denver area. I forget specific which.
I know it would be awkward if I asked you for the specific name of the judge. So what's his name?
Yeah, and no, I don't kidding. Even know,
I'm not going to do that to you because you may have to show up in front of that person someday. I don't know. Dave, as you look at this, you must have some thoughts in your head about changes we need to be making. And this is also a team effort. DEA can't tackle this problem all by itself. You have ICE. You have all these other local law enforcement agencies. You have other agencies beyond law enforcement that impact this. What is a way out for us? How do we start to stem the tide? And the education piece you talked about, I get it. Good. Start young. Get them familiar with the idea that, hey, we're just not going to ever take pills unless a real doctor gives them to us or our parents give them to us. I get that's great. What are the other things we need to do to try to stem the tide of these unnecessary deaths?
I do think it's messaging. You know, I think it's very interesting that when I have these conversations with others in law enforcement in our office, with yourself, your listeners, but then just, you know, having conversations that I've had with, you know, family, friends, you know, parents of students with my kids, and we start telling these stories and I share what I'm doing. It's just interesting that it's sad, I should say, where a year ago, 2 years ago, while I might have learned of these overdose stories via work, now I'm having these conversations, you know, with other parents that I know. And when they hear what I'm saying, it's just startling, especially when I'm messaging the availability of these drugs on, you know, social media platforms. And I think it starts with getting this message out. There's not that many people out there talking about the reasons behind the overdoses, you know, the direct correlation with violent crime, you know, the criminal justice system. You know, how do we make basically a deterrent so these individuals trafficking are deterred? You know, it's my part and our agents' part to go out there, do our investigations, and do our best to gather the evidence so that, you know, in the courtroom, like where you've been yourself, you know, to prosecute these cases. And then, you know, I would say, again, to your listeners, spread this message to your loved ones. You know, if it makes you go talk to another family member over the holidays of, you know, some difficult conversations, or just spreading the message, or if it makes you go talk to, you know, a city council or a legislator, then I say, you know, go do so. And, you know, we'll continue to do our job on the investigative end. And as much as you'll have me on, I'll continue.
Of course, I'm going to continue to do that. Dave, if we had stronger bail and bond like we did in the old days, if these guys were kept off the streets for a longer period of time and unable to engage in the further practices, or even more punishment on the back end, do you think that would have an impact also on this issue?
Like I said, with the, you know, whether it was the border or even this, every added barrier to the trafficking, I think it does make an issue. And I think we've had stories of individuals where, in, let's just say, years past, if you had arrested someone, they might be more willing to cooperate, to you know, to build additional cases, or, you know, to go after the bigger organizations. And now what we see is individuals not so intimidated, maybe deterred is the right way, better
yeah.
word.
Yeah,
straight back out on the
street.
Yeah,
the cost to them is so insignificant. Dave, I have 30 seconds left, and one caller called in and asked a great question. I can give you 30 seconds on this. Is this a peculiarly United States issue, or is the rest of the world seeing this in different places?
I was just thinking about that this morning. I have not heard those other stories from around the world. And, you know, I think maybe in time those stories will come out, but this has been, to my knowledge, when it comes to the counterfeit pills, definitely a U.S. thing that's been talked about, at least, you know, in my circles. I have not seen, you know, hey, Canada's experiencing this, or Europe. You know, In the future, I don't doubt the Mexican drug trafficking organization.
Can you hear that music, buddy? Buddy, I could have you on all hour. We'll have you back again real soon. Look, first off, have a happy fentanyl-free Thanksgiving Day with your family, would you? Thanks, Dave Oleski, acting special agent in charge for the DEA out here in this part of the country. Listen, when we come back, Dr. Benjamin Raby and some other stuff, George Brockler, 710 KNUS. George Brockler back with you here on 710 KNUS for our last segment before we turn it over to Charlie Kirk or whoever's filling in for him pre-Thanksgiving. My thanks to acting special agent in charge of the DEA. My God, that's a mouthful. Dave Oleski, super interview, super expert. If you didn't get a chance to hear the whole thing, go back to the podcast and take a listen. Important for us to consider. I think it touches upon so many things that are going on right now, including the crime tsunami that is washing over the state of Colorado. If you go to Twitter, and you should, at George Brockler, B-R-A-U-C-H-L-E-R, is my Twitter feed. Right now, a super lefty legislator out of the Capitol, out of Denver, a guy named Dave Ortiz, clearly a veteran who has served his country honorably. I don't take anything away from him. I'm sure he's a good man, but his position on crime is cuckoo for crack smoking Cocoa Puffs. He just tweeted out that, hey, nothing we did with our bail reform has had any impact on crime at all. I imagine he is saying that sitting in an apartment somewhere watching cars get stolen right now, if he looked out his window, because we are at about 213% the national rate for car theft. It has, I don't know that it's ever been bigger in the city of Denver. Maybe we'll have Dave on if he's got the guts to come on the radio here. And as a veteran, I presume that he does, and we'll have that conversation. But just crack smoke crazy stuff that is going on all the time. My hope had been, before we head into Thanksgiving, with all of the things that are going on in Denver in terms of the new lockdowns here, there, and everywhere, that we would have on our wicked smart in-house doctor in this particular case, Dr. Benjamin Raby, all the way from Boston. Benji, thanks for joining us.
Gobble, gobble.
Buddy, do you have to work today before Thanksgiving?
Sure.
What? Do you have to work tomorrow on Thanksgiving?
This year, no. I used to do a little bit of call on Thanksgiving. I do a lot. I always do. I used to do all the time Christmas. I would always take Christmas. That was my thing. As someone who celebrates Hanukkah, I always felt it was good to be able to give to everybody by being there on Christmas. We'd bring in stuff, you know, donuts and bagels and stuff for now,
hold on,
in the morning.
I want to hit the stereotype head on. And then Chinese food for dinner?
Of course.
That's because all I'm thinking of course, is Seinfeld. That's all I can think of is how they used to do Christmas. That's great that you would do that, by the way. And my hope is that the other Christmassy people would be like, hey, whatever time you needed to take off for the Festival of Lights and stuff, you'd do that.
Exactly. Exactly.
Have you had your booster shot?
I did. I had it about 3 weeks ago, and I was quite nervous that I was going to have some side effects, and it was the easiest of the three shots.
Did you go with the same flavor you had before?
I did, and that was because it just happened to be available, but if I would have had to, I would have gone with the opposite.
Now, I got mine as well. This week, I went, met my wife at Sam's Club, of all places. And they were just taking walk-ins. I mean, it took, you know, 20, 25 minutes and stuff, but they were just taking walk-ins. So my 12-year-old turned 12 on Sunday. He got his vaccine on Monday. And then we went and got the booster. That one kicked my butt a little bit more than the other two. And I think I had told you this before. I was dreading the first and second Moderna shots because everyone I knew that was attractive and smart got really bent out of shape on the second one, and I felt nothing. And that reaffirmed for me that I'm neither good looking nor smart. And then the third one, I was doing great until maybe it was 2 days ago we got the shot. Yesterday at like 1 o'clock, all of a sudden my neck was achy. My muscles felt fatigued. I felt like, you know, I was coming down. And then today I'm back to 100%. Even my shoulder doesn't hurt.
Exactly. Exactly.
Is that something that you're recommending to everybody, by the way? Are you, now that the CDC has come out with its guidance, are you telling everybody you know, go out there, get the dang booster?
Yeah, I think if what I would say is if you had your original two shots, if you had them any time earlier than like July, August, now I would suggest getting the booster. Whereas if you had your, if you got your initial two doses more recently, August, September, then it's not a bad idea to wait a little while, because having some space between them actually leads to a better effect from the booster. A lot of people, about 50% of people who got vaccinated, had them done, you know, last January, February, March, those people should all get the booster shot if they can get access to it, for sure.
Is it your sense that at some point, though, it feels like this COVID thing in some form is going to be around with us forever, like the flu. Maybe I'm wrong. But is it your sense that at some point, though, folks are going to need to catch the flu, so to speak, like to get the COVID and ride this thing out? Or are we going to be in this constant state of need a shot every 6 months?
Yeah, it's a good question. What I'm about to say is a little bit of a guesstimate, of course. But I think that what's going to happen is that over the next few months, we're going to see two or three things. One is that the majority of people are going to have had two shots, and many will have had a booster, and so the number of cases overall should go down. It's very likely, and I'm sure you'll want to talk about this a little bit, that there are two new medications that just passed some interesting first round of clinical trials. Yeah, these pills. And if those come onto the market, as it looks like they're going to, and they do what the clinical trials suggest they're able to do, we're going to see a major reduction in hospitalizations and in deaths. And so at that point, it will start looking a lot more like the flu, in the sense that the number of people who will ultimately do really badly is going to be much, much, much lower, and we'll hopefully be able to open up again.
Dr. Benjamin Raby from way out in Boston at that children's hospital out there, I imagine that's a pretty big deal. Look, we have a text. Can I read it to you and then you can opine on it? This is from a listener. Please ask your guest why we have higher rates of COVID with more vaccinated.
Oh, good. So if you look at the numbers week to week, it's true that the numbers are starting to trend up now. But what you need to compare it to is, for example, this time last year, when the proportion of people who were vaccinated was basically none. And you'll see that the overall spikes and the peaks and the overall prevalence rates are much, much, much lower than they were back before we had vaccination. And even more so, if you look at the number of people of those that end up in the hospital or who are dying, that number is a fraction of what it was last year. And there are several websites you can Google to look at rates over, you know, like COVID tracker, and they'll show you these graphs, and you'll just see these huge peaks compared to what we're at now. It's much, much lower. And if you look at where the majority of the infections are happening now, the ones that are resulting in people being really sick are mostly, again, among the people who have not been vaccinated, or people who got vaccinated really early on and really would have benefited from now getting a booster. That's why I'm suggesting the booster. But the numbers are lower.
Can I ask you something? Overall, I had texted you about this, too, and that is, we hear about these breakthrough cases, and a lot of people are like, well, it's not really a vaccine. If you could still catch it, you've got, and all this. Of the breakthrough cases, is anyone keeping track of who had Moderna, Pfizer, and J&J, and will they release that information? And I'm saying that as someone who's like, if I heard that J&J was like good for 90% of the breakthroughs, I am going to go get J&J, right? Like, if you're going to get stuck, you're going to get stuck with something that works. Do they keep track of those numbers, and what are they?
So I have not been following that granularity of it in terms of which vaccine, if one vaccine is doing better than another on that. It's been very challenging to get the numbers right because of Delta, because, you know, that once that came into play, you were starting to see a mix of between Delta and the original viruses, and the rates are a little bit different. But there are multiple groups that are trying to track this. The companies definitely have a responsibility and have to track part of it. The CDC is doing it, and then there are many research groups that are studying it, and I'm sure We've already seen some papers, but we're going to start seeing really good papers with a lot of data that'll be able to give us those answers. We know that breakthrough cases happen the most among, unfortunately, the people who we would love to see the most protected would be the immunocompromised. And the reason for that is that the immunocompromised, one of the ways in which they're compromised is their immune system just can't mount as high a vaccine response as you'd like. So that's one group. And then the other group are people who the longer out you were from your first doses, the vaccine eventually would wane. And so that's where the boosters come in. Whether it's going to be one vaccine or the other that does a little bit better, that we don't yet have clear data on.
Dr. Benjamin Raby, I could talk with you obviously all day, but we are running out of time for the entire freaking show. Let me say right up front, happy Thanksgiving to you and your family. I hope you guys are all going to be together.
We will. My sister and her family are coming in, and we'll have a few friends as well. I wish you guys all the best. I have a lot of thanks to give to many different people, but to you for fighting the good fight and having just a wonderful show.
Listen, at some point, man, you're going to have to come out here. And now that I've got the Monday through Friday thing, I want to get you in studio and we can open it up to callers and just make it a knockdown dragout.
That would be a lot of fun.
Happy Thanksgiving, Dr. Benjamin Raby. Happy Thanksgiving, Geronimo. Everybody else at 710 KNUS. I'll be back Friday. It's going to be in the chair with me. Hell, maybe running the show will be somebody named Amanda. She is in town. Enjoy your turkey. Until that time, George Brockler on 710 KNUS.
3-star general Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never before seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to salemnow.com. Salemnow.com.